Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhumann. Today, I'm joined by my friend and confidant, Jennifer Hashley. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing well. Two times in 1 week. Good stuff.
I know. It's great.
Well, I love having you on. You bring such a wealth of information. Engage with guests. Tremendous. Must be all the money I'm paying you.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm getting so rich doing this. I love it.
I know.
I'm rich in knowledge of all these wonderful people you bring onto the show, though.
Nice spin. I like that. Hey, Jennifer, a little bit about your background before we jump into today's conversation. When Jennifer Hashley started the New Entry Sustainable Farming Project out of the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, it was one of the first initiatives nationwide to help immigrants and refugees develop commercial farming opportunities. Now, 20 years in, Jennifer continues to help farmers excel in the field, and New Entry gives them the tools to do that. It's a revolutionary program that treats sustainable and regenerative farming as jobs creation and economic growth for regions often in need of stimulus. Jennifer, you recently relocated New Entry Farming Project to the Moraine Farm, a trustee's property in the North Shore of Massachusetts in Beverly.
Yes, it's so exciting. It's been one of my longtime dreams to have our program on one physical property. We were before a kind of scattered site model with farms in different locations, a food hub elsewhere, offices elsewhere, and now can look out my window and see the fields and see the farmers.
Beautiful. Great spot, too. So what's the plan for the new location?
So the plan is more of the same and then some. So we're going to be able to expand our incubator farm training programs. We'll be able to have all our classes on site with everything at the ready. We have greenhouses, deer fencing, irrigation. We have our food hub on location so we can accept product right there, sell it on site, and move it off into the marketplace. Hopefully we'll be able to engage some school programs. There's the Waldorf School right on site, so do a little more farmed education programming. And I was just at a meeting today thinking about organic grain production. So since we have much larger acreage before we grow into the space with our incubator farm program, we'll be doing some innovative cover crop mixes and building soil health, and then hopefully no-till seeding some organic grains into the crop rotation mix. So I'm super excited about that. We're meeting with a milling group and looking at some bakery partnerships and other things and other local farms and get them on board with integrating small grains into diversified vegetable operations.
Wow, that's fantastic. Between the bakeries, the breweries.
Yes, the malting people.
Right. A lot of interest there.
Distilleries.
Having not just the provenance, the backstory, but within shouting distance of where you're actually buying these products. Very exciting. And I know, you know, from looking at even things like universities, when they talk about when they build new buildings, they have new infrastructure, it's a draw for new students, for new participants. Are you looking at the same for up in Beverly?
Absolutely. We're doing a lot more outreach and partnership building with area colleges and universities for their internship programs and visits and talking to their environmental studies and biology departments to come and use this space as a learning laboratory for their programs.
All right. Well, let's start today by talking about training a future workforce. So the subject of future of work has been at the tip of the tongue for many planners and futurists over the last couple of years. But what I've noticed is that most of those discussions have been focused on white collar or high tech or knowledge workers or even automation or anti-automation, dialogues. So in fact, we have some of the most progressive political leaders queuing up presidential campaigns based off the notion that it's our birthright as Americans to access a free 4-year college education. The objective, I think, of this is of this call to action by these political leaders is to absolve young adults from crippling debt as they enter the workforce and to begin their careers. Right? I mean, I guess that makes a great deal of sense, but what about, or how do we address this in a different way? Because I think that might be even situations where we're addressing the symptom of the problem and not really the cause of the concern. Maybe that also depends on how much debt you come out of college with too, right?
Yes.
We have to ask this, and I think this is, you know, an angle for the modern world. Do we all have to be knowledge workers, engineers, poli-sci majors, or communications folks? What about the trades? What about the vocational education? And, you know, in affording everyone access to a 4-year degree, is that really what we all need? and more politicians telling us that we need this instead of being aware of changing worlds, maybe it's a situation where they don't have their finger on the pulse of the future of work. In fact, supporting vocational education is about promoting business empowerment, entrepreneurship, and more autonomy in your career often. Some feel that investing in our vocational training programs is a way to re-engage and fuel our future middle class, to reinvigorate the American dream. Mm-hmm. After all, vocational can be about lifelong learning as well. According to a recent study called the Global Vocational Training Market Report Projections, for 2019 to 2020, over the next 5 years, vocational training market will register a 9.8% compound annual growth. In terms of revenue, the global market size will reach about $48 billion by 2024, which is up from $30 billion in 2019. That's a pretty good size growth, and we're seeing more interest in the space. Additionally, there are over 1 billion farmers in the world, so says FAO, and another 200 million in global fisheries. And as we've discussed in detail on Sourcing Matters, driven both by consumer desirability and the requirements for planetary boundaries forcing our hand, the world of food producing is changing. And in coming years, we'll have to have a new workforce implementing new operating systems which are closer to the rule of natural order. So, who and how are we going to train tomorrow's food producers? Jennifer, you want to take a stab at that to begin?
Well, there are so many ways, and I think so many approaches, and, you know, people are taking different tactics. I think some people are all about ag is all about STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, and it's all going to be about artificial intelligence, biotech, you know, this technology solution to feeding the planet. And then there are other people that still feel like, put your hands in the soil, connection to the land, keep it at a scale that's ecologically appropriate. You know, there's a lot of labor involved in that, and that's okay. We need jobs. We need meaningful work for people to do and, you know, use technology to our advantage. But also don't forget that human management is still a really critical part about understanding ecological systems and managing all the complexity in a system. And so I don't think we're ever going to be able to fully take humans out of it, and needing to understand all the systems at the ground level is something that I'm really passionate about. So, I mean, I think there's a role and a place for technology, and that's great. And I think we also need to understand that, you know, there shouldn't be a divide between technology and agriculture and production agriculture and hands in the dirt agriculture. I think we need all of it.
Yeah. I had one friend that used to say, farming isn't rocket science. It's much more complicated.
I think right? That's totally true.
There you go. All right. Today, we welcome a guest working on building educational programs for tomorrow's workforce. We welcome Shannon Algier, the Farm Liaison Manager at Stone Barn Center in Tarrytown. Hey, Shannon, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
It's our pleasure having you on, and thanks for joining us to share some wisdom.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I love where you guys started us off today. As we know, farming is an integral part of life, and I love, Jennifer, that you address the complexity of that, that we're not just teaching a technical skill set, but this also covers an academic and an experiential learning as well as a social service. So thank you so much for opening us with that today.
One of the things that we've been talking a lot about in our group, I think, you know, Shannon's been a part of our agricultural apprenticeship learning network, which is really about, you know, land-based training and practical skills development for future farmers and those that want to be part of the next generation of agriculture. And one of the conversations we've been having is the challenge of attracting people to farming and making sure that they understand that farming is a viable career pathway for them. So how are you guys handling that at Stone Barns? How are you building the pipeline?
What we talk about in the forefront of challenges for farmers or people who want to farm and choose that as a career pathway has a lot to do with land access and capital. And I think those are really important issues for us to address. But I also believe that there is a whole host of intricacies that's important for us to look at as we are building a future career pathway for farmers. Farming can be quite isolating. If people are choosing to farm, they're really tuned in and connected to natural systems. And I think that it's important for us as communities and societies to sort of help to encourage them and elevate them and protect them in order for them to be able to be making the most empowered nature-based choices that they have access to as they make land steward choices and decide about how to keep their business thriving and generate an entrepreneurial, innovative spirit that can address the success, the long-term success and continuation of their work. I think what's beautiful about the center and the way that we look at farmer training is we really have a hub and a network of individuals that we can bring together from so many different backgrounds. As we know, food and farming connects so many of us, no matter what kind of profession, what kind of region and cultural influence that we have. And so the beauty of bringing farmers into the center of that, to be able to have access and resources that are informing them about all of their practices in farm systems, in farm business, but also how what their service does to in cross-section with society.
I think that, yeah, that community piece is something that keeps coming up more and more in this space, that, you know, land is such an amazing platform for social cohesion and building community and connection to nature. And I know that that's something that's near and dear to your heart.
Some specific programs that you've launched at Stone Barns, which I'm familiar with, and I'd love to, if you would share with our audience a bit more about the apprenticeship program. And, you know, how did you frame the apprenticeship program, and how does it differentiate from some of the other offerings you have?
The apprenticeship program was sort of born out of recognizing all of the individuals and the people that were coming to us at the center and had such a curiosity and an interest in learning about our farm systems and sort of a curiosity about what we were generating and creating there. So it was really a response to that, and of course a response to, as an organization, us recognizing that it's critical work for us to be generating future farmers, and it's also critical work for us to find ways to preserve farmland. And so as we sort of bring all of those intentions together and learn how to weave people into that and generate the skill sets that they need in order to carry that on, it's really exciting for us, and it constantly evolves just as our land base is evolving, our communities are evolving, and as we know our world is evolving, we need to be able to sort of respond to that and continue to design in response. Similar to how we're working the land, we have intention and then very clear conversation and sort of a call and response. So the program was started about 2005 by a program director, Nena, and she began to cultivate the resources we needed, specifically with a BFRDP grant, for us to be able to not only have individuals come and apprentice by learning in the field and working with us, like a very typical artisanal apprenticeship, but also how can we continue to build and supplement that education with the curriculum that they might need in order to, learn a whole host of skill sets they need to survive. Because as we know, farmers are not just land stewards, but they're also business people, mechanics, organizers, coaches, educators, scientists. And really have to learn how to evolve in partnerships. So what's unique about our Growing Farmers Initiative program is the nonprofit organization that we have able to generate through philanthropy and membership resources that we're able to pull upon that helps us to build a full curriculum and experiential learning for those coming through our program. So what that looks like is a 9-month apprenticeship for about 10 individuals each year. What's unique about our system, it is a full agroecological farm with lots of different diverse systems within the whole farm plan. So whether that's livestock or crops and all of the different enterprises within each of those routes, also a full sort of perimeter of agroforestry, fruit production, ornamental gardens, and beekeeping. So we have a really beautiful, complex farm system. And our apprentices come through either a livestock program or a crop track. And so we have some specialization around each of those fields. But within that, we also have a rotational system so that they're able to spend some time in each of the other systems so that they're understanding a whole farm planning.
That's great. And you really mentioned the partnerships that you're able to bring to the apprenticeship program, which I think really sets you apart from other programs. You're bringing in speakers and service agencies and others to introduce your apprentices to those really important community connections early on. Do you want to describe some of those partnerships?
Sure. Yeah. Between the center, Stone Barns, and also our on-site partners, Blue Hill, through that collaboration, we have just created a really expansive network of resources, both farmers, chefs, food producers, and then through the work of our nonprofit, we're also bringing in a very public interface through teachers, advocacy groups, universities focusing on doctor programs and how that relates to farm health, environmental science and monitoring programs, and how that relates to our conservation partnerships, and then the occasional investor and corporate group. So there's this beautiful network that we're able to tune into on the day-to-day and help our farm team sort of develop the skill sets they need to be able to interface with all of those different people and how to sort of knit a language and a storytelling that allows them to pitch and educate the work that they do to many people. And again, this sort of workshop schedule that we're able to pull together is really exciting, covering topics such as farm systems, as well as business training and academia. And so the way that we're able to reach out both for our workshops and then our conferences, it's a beautiful opportunity to pull in experts from different fields and also support the work that they're doing out in the region. I'm so excited about a business intensive that we're pulling together in November. We're hosting Tim Biello of American Farmland Trust to come talk about land access. We have a farmer that used to be a programs director at the center, and she's done an amazing job building a successful farm enterprise. Her name's Caroline Pam. She's in the kitchen garden, and she'll be coming to talk to our group about, with her loan officers, to talk about loans and how to apply and carry out grant applications for infrastructure support.
I want to return back to some of these key aspects of, you know, getting the folks that you've trained to kick off their own initiatives, to give them the tools they need, farmland access, the resources they need, the credit. But I wanted to just ask before we jump to that, maybe you could share with our audience some of the success stories that you've had of your apprentices coming out. Maybe there's a few anecdotes that stick out in your mind of something that's interesting or different that you've had from folks coming through your program.
Absolutely. We've had such an amazing group of people of all ages that have come through our program. And I'd say about 70% are still farming. And I have to be sure to also get across that the 30% that aren't farming are not failures. They're doing amazing work in different fields, such as teaching, as arborists, as educators, and in the public health sector. And what I love is that having an experience like this and on a farm informs all of the work that we do and ripples that out into all of the industries in society. So a couple of our favorite alumni, I'd say, I'm going to talk about Manisha. Manisha came through our program. She came to us with a, she's a Nepalese native, and she came to our program after coming to the States to get her master's degree in plant science. And as she came through our program, we had a lot of open dialogue. Her parents were farmers, are farmers in Nepal, and really just were very surprised about her choice to be a farmer, and really were sort of discouraging that without, you know, just wanting her to have more opportunities and utilize resources in a way that would help her thrive. So she had to find a pathway that would build not only the trust that her family would have in her, but also her own confidence to choose that pathway. So she came to us for a season and just brought so much to the community and to the farm system there, and then moved back to Nepal after coming through the program and is now setting up farms and advising farms in Nepal and working with her parents and building their, sort of bringing her knowledge set to their farm and operation. I think another individual that I love talking about is Jason Grauer, because this individual, a lot of the farm team that we have in place now at our center, Jennifer met a lot of those individuals when we did an on-farm mentorship workshop this winter. Most of our farm managers are individuals that have come through our apprentice program, and the timing was right, and we were able to move them into sort of graduated positions on the farm. And Jason is a great example of that. He was working in the financial district on Wall Street as a young man and came out to the farm and in the middle of winter and was just completely moved by what he was seeing and also by engaging with our farm director, Jack, and seeing something in him that really sparked and inspired a curiosity for Jason. So he came to the farm every weekend for about a year, every season, and then decided to leave his Wall Street job and apply for the apprenticeship. And again, this is a moment where we have to find support systems for convincing families of these major risky decisions of choosing farming as a career path. And I think that piece about risk is really important for us to address, not only that the farmer, the individual in making the choice to farm is, that's a major risk, but also in the different partnerships that we're creating and generating as a farm enterprise. It's beyond transactional. I sell you my product and we all go home. The relationships around farming and enterprise is really about taking risks together, and those partnerships through business is really important. And we've learned that at the center with our relationship between Jack, our farm director, and our head chef on site, Dan Barber, and the kind of risk that they need to take together in order to generate a successful business, as well as push the innovation of how to evolve a farm. So Jason was hired because he's also really great about that with the interface with the restaurant and with the chefs, and he's a great businessman, as you can imagine, pulling him off Wall Street like we did. So he came for an apprenticeship at the center, really thrived. He followed that up with some of our connections to create pathway for him. Next, he went to Four Season Farm in Maine, and then he went to Cornell to work with a seed saver that we are partnering with. After those experiences, he came back. He set up a seed a company, an online seed sourcing company, and was looking for his next opportunity. And that's when Jack was looking for a field foreman and someone that could lead some of our seed breeding innovations, as well as kind of spearhead our partnership with a restaurant. So Jason is now our crops production manager and one of the most amazing mentors and educators on the property. So those are two examples. Not everybody leaves the nest or they return, and others, many others, hundreds of others are out there in the world carrying out this really good work with this kind of influence.
That's great. I mean, I like that you're framing it as taking the risk together in the relational aspect. I think the narrative for so long has among farm families and people growing up on the farm is to leave and don't come back, you know, don't come back to this kind of lifestyle. So having that familial support to either return to the farm or to launch into a farming career is so key.
Yeah, you know, we are looking at that continually, as I said, in the development of our services in our Growing and Farmers Initiative department. Last year, we had a pretty special partnership with Will Rosenzweig of Berkeley School of Business, and he came to us to help elevate the conversation around farm business training into something called the entrepreneurial thinking. So we had a week-long intensive with farmers that were a little further in their career, not our typical beginning farmer population, but farmers who were anywhere from 5, 10 to 20 years into their operations. And it was a week-long curriculum that he really spearheaded, and we learned so much from that experience because, again, what we're talking about is sort of the risk that we're engaging in, how to bring the most to our partnerships, how to keep innovating so that we're not isolating out the possibilities of how to make a farm thrive. Not only that, but not deducing our farmers down to checks and balances, but actually elevating our farmers as leaders that can really offer us more. So how to help a farmer tap into all of those parts of themselves in order to generate their businesses and their careers forward. So that was a really exciting week-long intensive. And one individual that was there, Nikiko, is a really great example of someone who has been raised in a family and a culture of farming. And her family has a fruit orchard on the West Coast. And she came, and she is just a bright light. And she was raised in the farm. She left the farm to discover herself and to further her education. And she's just in that moment right now of committing to and engaging with her family to take on the responsibility and take on the reins of the farmer, of the farm itself. So she's in that successor moment. So we had her in the week-long program, and it was such a gift for us to see that exchange and hear the struggles and hear the celebrations in that, and also for her to have a moment to sort of be in retreat with other like-minded individuals and get some new perspectives as well and bring that back to her family.
Hmm. Well, I think that is extremely rewarding situations. All of those stories make it, I'm sure, worth getting up every morning to do this, to make this happen. And I'm sure there are struggles on any farming day, but to see those type of success stories coming out of your program is a testament to your work. And Shannon, let me read a little more about your background, and we'll jump into a couple of questions about you as well. So as mentioned, Shannon Algier is a farmer liaison manager at Stone Barn Center. Shannon has taught at nature centers, volunteered as a ranger in Costa Rica National Park Service, managed biodynamic greenhouse operations, and helped develop 60-member Market Farm in Connecticut. Shannon first came to Stone Barns in 2003 when her and her husband, Jack, And they had played a major role on the farm, mostly with flowers and herb manager. Shannon now employs her extensive farming and mentorship experience to facilitate educational engagement, assisting in design of a dynamic, impactful farm connection for visitors, aspiring farmers, and students. So one thing that you and Jennifer had brought up, and I think this is a key thread, is the importance of family involvement in farming and in production. Obviously, with you and Jack, who are there, and your kids are immersed into Stone Barn Center. But did you grow up in an agricultural family or a family that was connected to natural order in a way? Then was this instilled into you from an early age?
Oh, thank you for asking. I did not grow up in a farming family, and I think that's a really important point because that's sort of the farmers that we're raising now. Most of the young farmers that come to us and did not inherit this, and so they're coming out of a curiosity and a spirit of enthusiasm that is just seeking for that connection. And when I was growing up, my grandparents had a little homestead, and so I had these great light touches of what that was like. And we were very close friends with a farming family, and my parents brought us there every weekend. And I could feel sort of not only the pleasures of a very deep connection to earth, but sort of the joy that is inherent in that sort of purposeful work and the community that's generated around that. I really could feel the hope and the celebration. It was so tangible. And so for me, I think, and also my husband, it was having sort of those, getting that experience and then feeling the gap in the world of public school and suburban upbringing and university. And so what I found is kind of an urge and a desire to fill that gap with a very specific sort of meandering path that would always bring me back to that place and that memory and sort of learn how to weave both of those experiences of my upbringing together into what is so magically become my role and my opportunities here at Stone Barn Center.
That's great. I think that this work is so important on that level. And I think you nailed it exactly, talking about that curiosity and that spirit of enthusiasm and the seeking of connection that people want mm-hmm. with both one another and the land that is increasingly missing in our interconnected screen space life. Or even as people are urbanizing for lots of different reasons, we're losing that connection with the land and with each other. And I think, yeah, it's great to... Yeah, to recognize that and see more young people coming into this work and really desiring that and wanting to build those community connections as we move forward.
And I think that's really like formulating a new way of farming, which is so important for us to be discovering, especially in light of climate change. And we need to shift our farming from practices that are degrading to the earth into practices that are regenerative and holistic. And so I think honoring sort of that that desire for connection can then be facilitated and grounded into sort of the practical, purposeful way of life and way of, farming that is going to be giving back. And, you know, I think for me, what I've seen at the center as we've stewarded this land, this particular plot for the past 16 years, and following regenerative practices and principles of soil health and biodiversity and sort of pollinator attraction. And really what I see is not just food production, but engaging in the land that helps it to thrive. And it made sense at the time, every step of the way. But as I reflect on that and stand in this beautiful, thriving ecosystem, that for me helps to heal that place where I wasn't sure what our role as humans was in this ecological web. And it's so nice to see that we can apply practices that help to sort of regenerate and foster in resilience in the planet, and also, make healthy food accessible.
I don't know what you guys are talking about, you and Jennifer talking about ecological systems. I think the app Fruit Ninja gives me enough exposure to good, healthy food systems, right? That's plenty. No problems at all. And my kids will laugh at me for saying that, because I think Fruit Ninja is probably as old as saying, like, posting something on Facebook. You got to keep fresh with these things, right? So, Shannon, for our last question, I wanted to ask you, just going back to some of the things it's been an underpinning for some of these conversations, and I think because you deal with these young farmers of tomorrow, you're dealing with the next folks that were discussing this idea of the future of work, and that's around land access. If there's something that our listeners could understand or appreciate, what would you share with them about land access and their appreciation of what we need to do for better appropriation, better resource management, better ecological system management with this land access?
Thank you for asking. I think it's really important to engage with organizations that are spearheading sort of the practical steps to helping farmers access land, helping communities to preserve land, and engaging with the conservation community in order for us to be able to populate especially peri-urban regions with open space and also regenerative farms.
That's fantastic stuff. I mean, I think that's the important part here is we become much more engaged in our surroundings. The idea of places continue to come up and looking at our perspective that our place can also be where our food's coming from and where we're supporting our local neighbors and production and agricultural models being more immersed into our everyday would be a very positive step. So, Jennifer, do you have some final thoughts here?
Shannon, you summed it up so nicely that the responsibility of mentoring these next generation of farmers is so vast and deep and holistic and systems-based. I think sometimes people just think, you grow up on a farm, you put seeds in the ground, and you sell them into the market or whatnot, and you're a farmer. And there's just so much more to it than that. I think you shared a lot of the challenges and the connections, and that I think people are more and more drawn to it because of this sense of connection to the land and wanting to give back and build something bigger than themselves. And so I'm just really grateful for the work that you're doing and for being part of this movement and for working together with you to make that happen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, I see it in the spirit of the youth and just the best ways that we can respond to that spirit and their questions and their desires for place in our world is going to help us continue to build a better system. And I think it's so important, too, because we're also seeing the struggles of an aging population of farmers, and I think that's really important for us to be ready to support them as they go through transition and being sure that we are developing and evolving a continuum of that work.
Hmm. Shannon, where can our listening audience learn more about the work you're doing at the Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture? Is the website the best location?
Yes, so definitely going to the website, www.stonebarncenter.org, and explore. We have not only resources for the public, but also a lot of great online farm resources like tutorials, case studies, and live stream videos of our conferences and workshops. And so we're in the New York region, right outside New York City, so we're accessible right by the Tappan Zee Bridge. So it's a really accessible place to come and visit.
And it's stunning. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It is. We're just it's the best, starting to green
one of the best
up
places
again,
to learn,
too.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, Shannon Elgier, thank you so much for taking the time to share this insight with our listening audience. I learned a great deal. Jennifer?
As always, Shannon, you are a wealth of knowledge and just exuding with positivity. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Shannon. It was wonderful. And Jennifer, to you too, thank you, because I learned a great deal about this future of work and what it can really represent.
Great.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys.